The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There is so much peace of mind when you sense that your money is aligned with your values and your convictions, as well as your financial goals. And when that alignment isn't present, then it just leaves all kinds of room for anxiety and worry. And that's just not a spot we want to be. But it is easier said than done. There is tons of financial information coming at us every single minute of every single day. It can actually be overwhelming. The terminology, the ideas and philosophies, the various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services, and all of the fine print, which nobody reads, or whatever. You should read it, but when you do, it just gets confusing and even scary. And if you're confused or you're scared, then you're not making good decisions. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 49 of Money and Mission. I'm James Good, and my co-host, Eric Terrio, is en route to Thailand on vacation.
Nice.
So he is leaving me here to do this by myself this week. It's been a busy, busy week. Tariff-related headlines continue to prevail. Right, they're just all over the place. Tariff this, tariff that. But tariffs are quickly becoming old news. Someone said not too long ago that people have the attention span of a goldfish. And that's actually not true. There's a recent study that suggested that people's attention span is actually not as long as a goldfish. Like, a goldfish attention span is 9 seconds. And apparently, according to Microsoft, the average attention span of a human being is only 8 seconds. So, you know, we've been hearing about tariffs now for months, and it's getting to be old news, right? But, you know, as we've been talking about on the podcast over the last year, the question is, are we in recession? I mean, because we've been hearing about that, too. That's old news. We've been hearing about it so long, I think we're sort of numb to it. Nobody really knows what that means, but it matters. It matters tremendously. The words recession and depression, right? It matters because the financial well-being of you and your family depend on whether we are in an economic expansion or an economic contraction. And if you're running a business, then you feel the impact of that either way. If you're running a charity, you feel the impact either way. No matter what you're doing, as you are pursuing your mission, if the money out there is contracting, if the economy is contracting, you feel it. Your investments act one way in an expanding economy, usually good, right? It's easy to make money when the economy is expanding. And when there's a period of recession or contraction, then your investments just either struggle or they maybe go down in value. So it matters. Recession, depression, right? Now, a well-constructed investment portfolio attempts to sort of mitigate or make it less harsh, the impact of those recessionary periods. But there's still financial pain. And truly, nobody, me, you, nobody likes financial pain, right? We go to all kinds of lengths to avoid financial pain. So it's one thing to say God owns it all, and we believe that, right? God does own it all. We're in his hands. We trust in him and everything. But we go to great lengths to avoid that pain, right? Nobody likes to be there. But so what do these words mean, though? Anyway, recession and depression. Well, a recession happens when something recedes from a prior high point. I was sharing this with my wife, and she said, sort of like a receding hairline. Yeah, sort of like a receding hairline. But let's as an analogy, right? Let's pretend you have a business, and in your business, you are making widgets. And you are selling these widgets to everybody else in the neighborhood. And each year, you've been selling 700 widgets. And you just, that's consistent, right? You've been doing it year after year after year. Well, your business is neither growing nor contracting. You're selling 700 widgets each year, about the same. But then there comes a year that you sell 800 widgets. And for whatever reason, maybe everybody needs more, maybe you found a new way of making the widgets or whatever, but you sell more than you did the year before. Your business has expanded. And then you sell 900 widgets the next year. And then you sell 1,000 widgets, right? So your business is expanding. But let's say after you reach that 1,000 widget point, now suddenly you have a year where you only sell 900 widgets. You have now receded from that high point, right? So, and if the next year you recede back further to only 800 widgets, then you've receded back even further. You're contracting from that high point. And an economy works the same way, right? When there's hundreds of millions of people in an economy, everything is much more complicated. And there's all these different sectors like, you know, restaurants and people who make coffee and people who manufacture candy and food and all these different things. But still, in general, if everything is receding or getting smaller, then you have a recession going on. So what happens then in a recession? I mean, nobody likes recessions, and we go to all kinds of lengths to avoid saying that we're in a recession because in a recession, the average, you know, typical person might experience things like the loss of a job, right? Employers may say, hey, we're not selling as much stuff, so we don't need as much help, so we're going to lay people off. Or maybe people have less income because they have less hours to work at work. Or they may have difficulty paying for basic necessities just because the price of everything has gone up and their income is down. Businesses might close, going bankrupt, or businesses may scale back on investments. But this is what happens when we have a recession. Things are gradually contracting from where they were at a previous high point. So that's a recession. Now, the word depression, again, is another really, really scary word. And there's a common understanding out there that a depression is like a gigantic recession. Like if a recession is, you know, coming back from where we were before, that a depression is going backwards in a really, really big way. It's like a recession on steroids. But I would argue that a depression happens when something is less vibrant than it was, less vibrant than expected, right? Like a person who is experiencing depression loses interest and enjoyment in other things, and maybe their emotions are very flat. So they're still out there functioning and everything, but they're just not as vibrant as they would expect. So when an economy goes into a depression, then that economy becomes less vibrant than expected. That could take the shape of more poverty and homelessness, right? Which really gives us pause for thought, right? Because we have more homelessness out there in our country today than ever before, and more poverty. But that's a little beside the point. So it's one of the things that's characteristic. Maybe there's more bankruptcies. There's high unemployment. During the Great Depression in the 1930s in the United States, unemployment reached 25% of the population. So approximately 15 million people at the time were unemployed. But think about that with me. If 25% of everyone was unemployed, that means that 75% of the population was still employed. So there was still economic activity happening in the middle of the Great Depression. So this is a really key point. It's not like things, I mean, yes, things get bad and things get worse, but it's not just like a recession on steroids. There's still a lot of economic activity that can be going on in the middle of a depression, just not as much as you would expect. And other countries too. You know, you can look up other countries' depressions. Finland had a depression in the early 90s. Of course, Germany had a depression, and the list goes on and on. So again, key point, you can still have economic growth in a depression, just less than average. Depressed growth. And certainly the value of stocks and bonds and mutual funds can still go up. And you could be doing fine for yourself. My grandfather lived through the Great Depression here in the United States. He did not go bankrupt. Most of the people in the community he lived in didn't go bankrupt. But he still said there was a lot of pain because, like, the supply chain dried up. There were other people that were bankrupt. So, like, if you needed to buy a new tire for your car, you simply couldn't count on it being there, because maybe there weren't enough tires being supplied. So a depression is depressed growth. To sum it up, recession and depression. These are scary words. And to be sure, when an economy is declining, instead of growing, financial pain occurs. Make sure that your investments and your wealth management plans are grounded in good principles. Stay out of debt. Make sure that the financial planner you're working with is aligned with your values and your convictions. We're about out of time. So much more we could say here, but you're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about
wealth management.
Wealth management.
Built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
Thank you, Eric.
No worries.
You need to, like, stop sliding notes in front of me so that I don't forget what I'm saying. That's right. But anyway, it's wow, what an intro to a segment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, last week we started covering the book, a book called The Eternity Portfolio. And we spent some time. If you didn't have an opportunity to listen to that episode,
go back and listen.
Listen to it. Yeah. And I wanted to read a page or so out of that book here just to pick up where we left off. And because one of the things we talked about last week, we hinted at, you know, like, how much should I give? How much belongs in an eternity portfolio? And,
mm-hmm. and some of the values that go along with that.
That's right. And
we got through chapter 4. So now this part 2, we're going to go through chapter 5 through 9.
That's right. But I'm going to do one of my favorite things whenever I'm reading a book. I always go to the end.
Mm.
Right, because I like to see where the book is headed. Joe's over here going, okay, I give up. Yeah, but
do you do that with fiction too?
Okay.
Just ruin the story.
All right. Don't ask those kinds of questions, okay? But really, you know, we said a portion of any financial plan, like, you allocate money for living expenses and you have to determine how much you need for that. You allocate money for education. You allocate money for retirement, and you know you have goals set for each one of those.
Each has a purpose.
For each one, a purpose. That's right. For every one of those pieces of your wealth management plan, and the Eternity portfolio has a purpose as well. But regardless of whatever area of your plan you're working at, you have a conviction about how much you need in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And you've arrived at that conviction by doing some study. And so conviction dictates action, right? Conviction comes first.
Sure.
And then no matter what you do, it grows out of something that you believe. So I'm reading here from the Eternity portfolio. What you believe about investing determines how you invest, how much you invest, and how long you invest. And I'll kind of insert, it also dictates what you invest in and the why of what you're investing. So conviction starts with understanding truth, and it progresses to the logical implications of that truth. So if I believe that I need money for retirement, then I will be putting money into a retirement plan,
mm-hmm.
right? And again, that feels logical, but it's this values transformed into vision and carried over to action. It's that progression. The Eternity portfolio then is one of those progressions where I need to, first of all, develop the conviction that I want to be giving and I want to be allocating a piece of my wealth to kingdom principles. And then I have to translate that into a vision, and then I translate that into action. So it is a logical extension of biblical truth as it applies to our financial resources. But to make the jump from mere knowledge to a vision that generates results, you have to truly believe. You simply won't do anything about it if you don't believe what you're working on. So there are three convictions that are central to the Eternity portfolio. Three convictions. First, there is a relationship, and that is a relationship with God. So you probably won't be able to develop a conviction to do what God wants you to do if you don't have a relationship with God to begin with. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just letting you cook. Sounds good.
That's right. and this is where, you know, that relationship with God begins with a personal relationship through Jesus Christ.
Mm.
And God mm-hmm. draws himself to us like that. And then our life begins to grow out of that kind of relationship. It's a response, which is the second conviction, the second piece, that first we have this relationship with God, and then that conviction brings to us the need to do something.
The response to God's love.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do with our money, or the money that's been entrusted to us, is a logical, it mirrors what's going on, or it reflects what's going on inside of us like that. And finally, then, there are rewards. God has used the prospect of eternal rewards as a motivator throughout his recorded dealings with people.
That's right. He rewards our faith.
That's right. The faithful manager that we talked about in last week, in the first part of our episode there, the faithful manager was rewarded. And Jesus told that story for a reason, right? So nowhere is the progression from relationship to response to rewards demonstrated more succinctly than in that story, and, well, actually even the story of Moses, too, who did what God had called him to do. And in Hebrews, we read that Moses, by faith, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter and decided on purpose to suffer affliction with God's people instead of enjoying the passing pleasures of sin. Hmm. And he looked to a greater reward. So we see that laid out in that way. So these are, you know, this is kind of a backdrop, if you will, for why we go about building an eternity portfolio or an allocation to an eternity portfolio in our own planning.
Mm-hmm. And I know last week where we left off with funding this eternity portfolio, and specifically we talked about how much is enough for now,
mm-hmm.
right? Those are your living expenses, your insurance, your taxes, money you're putting into retirements, and the money that's going into this eternity portfolio. But now we want to pick up chapter 5, where they talk about how much is enough, not just for now, but how much is enough for good? For good.
Yeah. So there's kind of a relationship, though, between how much is enough for now and how much is enough for good. I think you just said that, but I feel like I'm going to sit here and repeat what you just said. But when, you know, lining out and financial planning, again, it gets into risk management, like how much do we have for insurance? And, of course, there are taxes to pay and other living expenses, et cetera. And so we've defined that. And now inside of that, we can allocate to giving. So that's a lot of times where we think about tithing, 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And but beyond the 10%, well, I guess one question is what, you know, suppose you sit down and do your budget and your heart of hearts, you discover that you don't really feel like you can make 10% work. Then what? Well,
give what you can.
Give what you can. Can you make 1% work?
Mm-hmm.
Can you make 2% work?
Can you go dedicate your time if you don't have surplus dollars?
Right. So, yeah, we just say start somewhere. Get into that groove because, you know, God works with you where you're at.
And that's why he said that giving leads to more effective giving. So mm-hmm. once you get involved and you start making those connections and you start being a joyful giver and feeling what that feels like,
mm-hmm.
you'll be called to do more.
And you get there's a motivation, right? Mm-hmm. And it begins to feed on itself like that. So, but then how much is enough for good? The interesting thing that happens is...
And that would be the finish line, right?
That would be the
concept.
That's
for
right.
good. What do I need? What's enough for good from here on out? For good.
For good.
Right. That's not to right. do good, I don't think, but like for good, like time-wise?
Yeah. Yeah, how much is enough that is going to carry me through,
mm-hmm.
right? But suppose that, you know, again, God blesses with even more resources, more income, more wealth than what you ever imagined. Well, if you've got that, how much is enough? If you've got that laid out, then frankly, what goes to the eternity portfolio, what goes to the giving piece, conceivably could get bigger and bigger and bigger so that you would wind up finding that you are actually giving enormously more than you ever dreamed possible.
And once you set that finish line, that makes it real at that point, right?
It does make it real. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. It makes it completely real.
And it keeps you from taking unnecessary risks because you've already got it figured out. You've got your for now. You've got enough. You've figured out your finish line.
That's right.
So there's no reason to take unnecessary risks because you're not risking to get anything that you don't need because you're good.
That's right. So, you know, this kind of begs the question of what if I never get to the finish line?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. You know, what if I never get to the finish line? I think this is probably the reason why it's important to build some of that eternity type mentality into the how much is enough piece.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where the current the current plan involves some of that giving. Because if you're waiting until you, quote, get there, then you may never do anything in that direction, in which case...
You made no difference at all.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, there's a lot of soul searching that happens in this kind of conversation. And we really do, we believe that each person should, in front of God, be making these decisions about where they are and what God has laid out for their lives.
And it brings up another good question that you can ask. What happens after I cross that finish line? It's a good question.
That is a great question.
But we're all out of time in this segment. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll pick up with Chapter 6, God's Asset Allocation. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we have been covering or discussing through a book called The Eternity Portfolio.
Let's just jump in.
Let's get back to the book here.
I think we left off at chapter 5, getting into 6.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about, like, what if I never get to the finish line and how much should be allocated to the eternity portfolio?
What happens after I cross the finish line?
What happens after I cross the finish line? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's interesting. The question, I guess, that keeps coming to my mind is, what is it that is so special about money? Like, what makes money so special? If we're reading in the Bible, we hear phrases about our treasure, but frequently, sometimes we'll hear people talk about time, talent, and treasure.
I heard somebody reference money as fun coupons.
Fun coupons.
Before, yeah. They try not to stress and worry about money. He said, I just think of them as fun coupons.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you inherit money, you earn money through your time and talent, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. It's competitive out there.
That's right. So when you give money, you are giving time and talent.
Uh-huh.
And that probably applies here when we talk about allocating to the eternity portfolio. You can allocate money, and I think in the previous segment you said that, you know, you could allocate time.
Yeah, if you don't got extra money to give, you can go down there and get hands on, help out.
Right. So, you know, I mean, if I'm giving to, let's say, an organization, my time at, you know, $500 an hour as a wealth manager,
mm-hmm.
what if they need a plumber?
Mm-hmm.
Like what I'm giving.
You working on that toilet for 2 hours.
That's right.
Isn't as efficient as you hiring a plumber and helping contribute that towards that.
I may
that.
Be better off giving them cash so they can hire the plumber instead mm-hmm. of watching me do whatever. We won't talk about that.
You'll have to watch some YouTube videos and take a lot when a pro could just come in, knock it out for a fair rate.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, when there's a need that's, you know, kind of placed on your heart, or as you're planning and you're thinking about this eternity portfolio, you need to keep in mind are some of these needs, some of these places that I'm aiming money, am I better off aiming time and talent, or am I better off aiming money? Right.
And that's exactly what chapter 6 talks about. Mm-hmm. God's asset allocation. They talk about the where, the what, and the how.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ties into exactly what you're saying.
I think I'm talking about the what.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep.
Yeah. What is actually aimed in that direction? So
discipleship. You can, you know, teach and minister to needs.
That's right.
Provide resources, money. There's so many ways that we can help.
That's right. You know, Joe does an amazing job here of making this conversation sound like it belongs on the radio.
I'm sure it would sound a lot different if we were in charge.
If I was in charge, it probably wouldn't sound anything like that. So he's giving his time and talent in that direction. But there may be
places. To Holy Family Radio, that's right.
That's exactly right.
And for, ultimately, the listeners. It's not just the radio station. It's what the radio station is doing.
That's right. That's right. So, so again, you know, we think about the what. We know that there's money allocated in different pieces of portfolios. But that doesn't mean, I mean, that the Eternity portfolio shouldn't have money allocated in that direction. But time and talent are fair game as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The where, then, also becomes an important question to be answering in terms of where do those resources go?
Everybody will take them.
Everybody.
Everybody will take your dollars if you're giving them. So it's important for us to search within, find our values, the other principles we've been talking about, because you can easily just give it away anywhere.
That's right. But when we kind of look to see how Jesus laid things out for his disciples, he first talked, he said, go to Jerusalem and then Judea and then all the rest of the world. And we kind of infer from that that it first of all makes sense to be taking care of your local church.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you are giving to your local church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually the book says that's a core investment.
That's a core.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Your local church is a core investment.
That's right. So so making sure that you are taking care of your local church is right at the top of that list. And after that, take care of Holy Family Radio.
That's right. They do many good things here. So they're always looking for support. And you can go on their website, 720whyf.com, and just read about some of the things they're doing, the events they have coming up, and who they're partnering with.
That's right. But Holy Family Radio, you know, again, if I structurally looked at what Jesus was talking about, Jerusalem and Judea, then, you know, if your church is kind of that first...
That's your Jerusalem.
That's your Jerusalem. That's mm-hmm. right. Then
that's cool. Yeah.
Holy Family Radio would be like your Judea. And there may be other things, too, like some of the organizations we've had here as guests and some of the guests that we'll be having on in coming weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But those will be other charitable organizations, charitable efforts here in the area that you are able to give to and invest and support in that way.
So there's local, regional, and the whole world.
And that's exactly right.
And that's because God has a plan. He's always had a plan for the whole world.
That's right. That's
not right. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Not,
that's right. But, you know, for us, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is our local.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for you, it might be...
Get down closer to Maryland.
Down closer Southern to
York
Maryland.
County.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you live out in the country.
I do.
So...
I go to a church called Fawn Grove Community Church. So they're doing great things, too.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's my Jerusalem.
But there's no town where you live. I mean, it's just out there.
Yeah. A few miles away, there's Delta.
Okay.
But I'm kind of in, they call it the trails, the Susquehanna Trails.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, but that's, again, you know, we aim our money in a direction like that, and there's a planned allocation in terms of where those dollars go, and the effort that we put out as well.
Mm-hmm. So now what about in chapter 7, they talk about making wise investments. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well,
and ultimately the book tells us that we have to strive for accountability. I think that's important.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So an investment into a charity. Well, first, if we go back to saying that the time, talent, and treasure,
mm-hmm.
time, money, and
ability
like that. May answer some of that question is, repeat your question if you could.
It's just striving for accountability, because some folks, they have that never look back mentality, right, when it comes to giving, and they just don't feel accountable. They feel like, well, I gave a little bit of money, so, you know, I think I'm doing the right thing.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of accountability, it's really looking at, well, there's several things to be looking at. One, let's say you're supporting an organization. like, you know, when we committed time to come here and do this podcast at Holy Family Radio, we wanted to know what their, what Holy Family Radio's mission was all about. We wanted to know that there was some accountability here, that, you know, we weren't all just sitting here wasting our time. And
what the station's intent is. And I think that might help with the accountability factor, is that you have to go back and remember what the intent of God is.
That's right.
That helps with accountability. And if you see yourself not on the same track, then you need to course correct.
That's right. And we've talked about, you know, again, we had Joy to the Berg here.
That was a good
on
one.
The podcast. And so if you are giving, if you're giving money, if you're giving time, whatever, you know, to Joy to the Berg, you want to understand their mission. You want to understand how they're actually executing on their mission, and that there's good accountability there as well.
And I like what the book talked about, the three initial screening factors to determine if an organization, you know, should be investigated further, whether that's worth your time, talent, and money.
Oh, so like, so like an opportunity comes up to be charitable and to be giving, and you're trying to decide,
is this a good one?
Do I really want to do this? Right. Well, you certainly, you want to look at the leadership of that organization, and are they inspiring? Are they mission focused? Right. Is it, does that align with your heart? And
the book talks about a multiplying effect, right?
Like, what are they planning to do with the gift that you, they would receive from you? And
how effective will that be?
How do they take that and multiply it out into their sphere of influence as well? No, that's great. I mean, you know, that that's something really specific that our listeners can focus on when they're trying to answer questions like, should I be supporting this particular organization? Look at the leadership, look at the mission, and how effective that organization is in multiplying the effect of the gift they would receive from you.
No, that's good.
We are up to our weekly puzzle.
Oh, great. Let's
My have favorite some fun. Part of the show. That's right.
All right. So last week, our question was, what number do you get when you multiply all the numbers on a telephone's number pad? So 46. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and a 0 at the bottom. So when you throw that 0 in there, automatically
it's 0.
It wipes it all out.
All right.
So the answer is 0.
That was a bad question. It was a bad puzzle. I like this week's better. In a lake, there is a patch of lily pads. Okay. Every day, the patch doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the patch to cover the entire lake, how long would it take the patch to cover half the lake?
So a patch of lily pads doubles in size.
That's right.
Every day.
Yeah. In a lake, there's a patch of lily pads.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, the patch doubles in size. If it takes 48 days for the patch to cover the entire lake, how long would it take for the patch to cover half the lake?
Oh, my, that's a tough one. We'll see if anyone can solve that.
That's right. If you think you know the answer, send your answer to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. And we'll read the correct answer on the show next week.
I'm rooting for people. I hope they get that one.
I hope they get that one.
That's a tough one.
That's right.
Well, we're going to take a quick break so we can hear from some of our supporters. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. And we talk every week about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we have been discussing and covering a book called The Eternity Portfolio. This is an amazing book, And if you have an opportunity to, you know, hop out to Amazon and get a copy yourself, I think you'll find some really helpful ideas and principles there in that book. Well, you know, we only have, you know, 12 or 13 minutes here as we take out this episode today, and we've talked about where the eternity portfolio, where giving should go, and a brief checklist for evaluating when there are charitable opportunities that can, you know, present themselves to us, how we can evaluate whether or not that's a good opportunity. And I think we want to get to like chapter 8 in the book where
legacy.
That's right. We're talking about, I want to just note one thing before we get to that legacy. And that is, when you're looking at an investment and evaluating an investment, that there are 5 P's to keep in mind: purpose, people, philosophy, process, and performance. Right? What is the purpose of the investment? Who are the people that are running the investment? What philosophy do those people bring to the table? And how do they implement that in their investment? What process do they use very specifically in making that investment work? And how have they performed? Right. So those five points really are important in any specific investment.
And we do the same in our firm.
We do.
Picking funds and different stocks and holdings. We go through a very, very similar process where we look at all those metrics and determine whether or not this would be a solid holding.
That's right. It's always important to remember that no matter your due diligence, that there's risk in everything you do.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So there could always be an outcome that you weren't expecting, meaning you could lose money. But especially in this context of an eternity portfolio, we are at this level trusting our investment to God, right? We're mm-hmm. doing this. We're doing this because He has commanded us to do it. And now we have faith and confidence that when we allocate in that direction, that He's also part of that planning. So we can't control whether investments gain or lose, but we do that in confidence because we know that's what He called us to do.
So let's talk about what the book describes as the greatest opportunity.
The greatest opportunity.
That's a powerful statement.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what they're talking about there in the book is leaving a legacy or a living legacy as opposed to leaving a legacy. So a lot of times folks will get into this legacy planning, and it's described by the financial community as estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of things that are really important to have be a part of that legacy or estate planning if we want values to be communicated, not just financial stuff, right?
Yeah.
The things that endure over time are probably the things that you could never buy with money to begin with.
Lessons to be learned. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So we believe that a living legacy or an effective legacy begins with communication, and it involves communication between you and the people who at some point will be picking up the baton, meaning you'll be passing your stuff that is currently in your name to them.
And potentially your mission. Mm-hmm.
That's right. But certainly the purpose and hopefully some of the vision that you have. And that involves communication. You need to also be an example of what you're talking about.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right. So if you talk about how important it is to, you know, be involved with making sure that people have enough to eat and addressing, you know, food insecurity and the mid-state, but you are always on your boat, you know.
And people see that and they recognize that.
That's right. They say, you're not doing what you're talking about here,
right? Your legacy will not last so long.
That's right. It's not that there's anything wrong with boats, but, you know, if it doesn't align with what you're talking about, then your actions need to be in alignment.
You're rowing away from your values.
That's right. So your example and how you live needs to be congruent if you want the folks that are coming along behind you to actually pick up and carry on with what you're trying to translate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is also learned by experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and let me just kind of give you an example. And I don't know if this was in the book, the Eternity Portfolio or not, but let's say that, you know, you really would like to have your grandchildren pick up and learn and have an opportunity to be impacted by mission work, let's say. Well, some of your assets could be aimed in the direction of helping them fund a mission trip. And they would then have an opportunity to engage in some mission project, and you would have funded it, and that makes something happen now, but it also gives them an opportunity to catch a vision and learn from experience.
Mm. Yeah.
Planning your children's inheritance, of course, but again, I mean, we said this all the way in episode number one, I think, that inheritances tend to just fizzle out.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
People receive inheritances, and 5 or 6 years later, the inheritances are just usually gone.
Mm-hmm. They weren't tracking it, had no purpose for the money, no plan of where they wanted to go in their life.
That's right. Yep. So your communication to your heirs, and you're helping to get them engaged in learning by experience and watching your example, the more of that that you can build into life now,
mm-hmm.
the greater the possibility is that when they actually have received stuff from you, that they will be continuing the vision and continuing the conviction that you had. Mm-hmm. This is unfortunately something you can't just write this into a will. This is life that needs to happen. And you should have a will. You should have your estate planning documents in place. And you should work with a good attorney to make sure that happens. But none of that can replace the personal experience.
Absolutely. I agree. And I see that we're getting down to the last few minutes here of our show. So
time goes so quickly.
Eternity is long, though.
That's right.
We said earlier. But so let's chapter 9. They talk about the 7 golden keys to investing for eternity. Let's touch on those before we wrap up.
Yeah. So we've talked already about the conviction principle. Mm-hmm. And that is just that, you know, there must be conviction if anything is going to happen.
And just a little foreshadowing, these 7 golden keys, there are 7 principles.
Mm-hmm.
So each one is a different principle.
Right. The communion principle, and that is that understanding without regular ongoing time spent with God, we can't know his specific will for our lives.
Mm. That's right.
So, you know, if you're sitting out there wondering, you know, what's God want me to do?
Ask him.
That's right. But you need to be spending time with God. And the church has some, you know, programs specifically, I mean, devotionals and different, you know, different specific disciplines that you can do to be in communion with God.
Mm-hmm.
The conduction principle, and that is God's big plan for giving, making sure that we're following God's plan, not mm-hmm. just whatever comes into our head.
Mm-hmm.
What is this combustion principle? Sounds like, you know, something that I would put in my car.
Yeah. Well, that's what it was, the one to talk about, the big growth, right? The multiplying effect. So you look for investments that result in exponential growth for the kingdom of God.
Right.
Exploding your investment.
Exploding your impact.
That's right.
That's right. Leveraging that out. like the ripple effect in a pond.
Mm-hmm.
The compassion principle, that is just remembering the needs of the poor along the way. Don't forget that. The connection principle, and that's just the intersection of our personal life mission, I should say, the intersection of that with our giving. And that really is probably one of the most powerful experiences that anyone could ever have, where their own, you get to see living in action your own mission because you were able to give.
Mm-hmm.
So something that is truly near and dear to your heart coming to life because of the tangible things you were able to do.
Yeah, where they intersect. That is powerful.
That's right. And finally, last but not least,
the consecration principle.
Mm-hmm.
That is the convergence of our life into the image of Christ. And that's very important. We should all strive to be exactly like Jesus.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it's not possible. We're all sinners, but mm-hmm. the more we can do every day to be a little bit more like him, we'll be better off every day.
That's right. And every little action we take, every little action that we take is an opportunity, again, for God to be molding us and teaching us. And so we want to be making sure. We just encourage you, again, to get the book, The Eternity Portfolio.
Illuminated. Mm-hmm. The Eternity Portfolio Illuminated.
And, you know, start taking some of those action steps.
And who's that by again? Alan Goddard?
Alan Goddard.
Mm-hmm.
Is the author, and the book is not that expensive. It's $10 or $12 on Amazon. So, but thanks for joining us here. And again, you're listening to Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Christ Community Catholic. You're listening to Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Nourishing our Catholic family, sharing our faith with others.